Thanks, Martin. It's good to be with you this morning. Hope you slept well. And we're this morning, and for the next four sessions, or with a Wednesday off for good behaviour, we're thinking about this topic of the environment, climate change, the Bible, and what on earth are we here for? Let me give you a quote. My name is Greta Thunberg. I'm 16 years old. I come from Sweden, and I want you to panic. I want you to act as if your house was on fire, because it is. Notre Dame will be rebuilt. I hope that its foundations are strong. I hope that our foundations are even stronger, but I fear they are not. Now, that was Greta Thunberg, the famous campaigner, speaking in the Strasbourg Parliament in April 2019, the day after Notre Dame burnt down. So that's the context, the quote. And she sees herself as sounding the world's fire alarm for the climate crisis that is not just coming on us, has fully arrived. Our house is on fire. It's burning down. I hope we will take as seriously the call to rebuild and prepare for the damage and do something about it as they will do that big cathedral, Notre Dame. Now, how do we respond to these kind of things? The fact is, this is a huge question. I'm coming to you as a pastor based in Cardiff. I've not been a green campaigner all my life. I haven't been a kind of a green voter. I've not been into environmental issues, you know, particularly. How did I get into this? Just around the time of the pandemic, we were starting to reopen again as a church, and we were reflecting on serving refreshments. And I'm sure when we were all on Zoom and you had to make your own cup of tea and watch TV and watch church on Zoom, on YouTube in your pajamas, and you made your own cup of tea. But when we came back to church, we were back to serving refreshments, and we really missed, didn't we? Kind of sharing tea and coffee in paper cups and eating together and so forth. Anyway, I had a couple of church members came to me and said, "Dave, we get through a lot of paper cups at Highfields. We've got a large congregation, and every week, many, many hundreds of cups going into recycling. Is that the right thing to be doing?" But, well, what else could we do? Well, we could wash up the cups, and we could take seriously our responsibility as stewards of God's world. So, I need to think a bit about this as a Christian. So I went to my bookshelf. I've got loads of books. I just didn't have many books, many topics on the topic of the environment from a Christian perspective. And so I thought, you know, I need to think a bit more about it, and did more thinking, more reflecting, and glad to share some thoughts with you over the next few days here at Keswick. But before I spout forth, I would love to get your opinion on the topic. And by your opinion, I don't mean kind of the inevitable political implications that flow from this, because I know that, you know, this is one of those areas where kind of economics and politics kind of bump into each other, as well as Bible. And so we need to be careful, because we are all one in Christ, and we need to honour each other and love one another. But there will be questions that we've got, concerns that we got, as we hear the topic, the environment. And you've come to a topic today, you could have come to other seminars, you've come to this one, so you're presumably slightly interested in the issue. Why are you here? What are you thinking about? What are the questions and the issues that are arising for you, assuming you're a Christian believer, on the issue of the environment? I'm going to pause at this point, and I'm going to invite you to just turn with people around you, not just the person you came with, maybe maximum four people. You can turn around, spin your head around, introduce yourself, and say, what are questions or concerns or issues that arise from a Christian perspective where we think about the topic of the environment? Is that okay? We'll do that for 5 minutes, and then we'll take some feedback, okay? Martin promised you'll be doing some work. We'll start up. Wow, you are an exceptionally chatty bunch. So, not many questions, not many issues, clearly. We have our roving Mike, who is going to take some feedback. So stick up a hand, and we'd love to hear the questions, the issues, the concerns, the comments that arise when we think about thinking about the environment from a Christian perspective. So someone be brave enough to stick. Yes, we've got a hand in the middle, just behind this pillar, and then let's hear what folks have got to say. I might actually jot a few things down, if that's okay, because I'd like to...
Borodar.
Borodar.
I think we just centred on stewardship, that we have a duty to steward the planet, but there is a wing of the church who just see it's part of the fall, nothing we can do about it, and so even deny climate change, and that's a problem within the church when we should be taking more care, we think.
So people seemingly denying climate change, but you also mentioned the fall, so there was a suggestion that there is something that's happening, but they're also denying it, so there's a kind of tension that's there. Yeah, thank you. Helpful. Anyone else want to throw in? Was there more hands? Yeah, hand at the front. Oh, hand there, and then hand at the front. Thanks.
Sorry, we didn't really talk about that. We just talked about why we came and what our concerns were.
Yeah.
I think for us, our daughter's absolutely passionate about the environment. And
yes.
A bit like the gentleman in front said, and she sees that a lot of evangelical Christians aren't concerned. And that is concerning for us, because I think it's what's drawn her away from the faith in many ways. And I think that's true for many people, if we're honest.
Wow.
It's especially young people. It's causing them to think, well, you people don't seem to be taking it seriously, so what's it all about?
Yeah, thank you so much. Wow, that's very honest to share. Thanks at the front.
Hello. We were generally chatting around this issue of, whilst the environment is an umbrella term and we attach to it the issues around climate change, in many ways, they're sort of slightly different, that consideration. It isn't beyond the wit of anybody to realise you shouldn't be pumping effluent into the seas, the rivers, and so on. And that's nothing to do with climate change. We should never have been doing it.
Yes.
And in terms of the stewarding of God's creation, there were things that could have been done and should be done separate from the debate and the discussions around the nature of climate change.
Yes.
It's not to do with climate change denying. That's just recognising that we have to have a clarity of thought.
It's good.
That sits around any discussions around this. And when you muddy the waters between them, you don't get a clarity of thought.
Yes.
I think I'll...
So someone hears you as maybe having a question about the climate change point, but then thinks, are you saying that we can do X, Y, and Z to the planet? No, of course not. So, yeah, I think that's good to parse and separate out the issues. Was there another hand? There's a hand over here somewhere, oh, right at the corner. Yeah, thanks.
Thank you very much. I think, effectively, that after the war, last war, world war, we've lived a golden age when we have wasted a lot of things and we did not really care because there was plenty. But on the other hand, I see today that our culture, post-Christian culture and the world in general, when you don't believe and fear God, then you believe in everything and in anything. And I feel that we are making the environment and the creation a God, rather than worshipping the God and the Creator. And I feel that there is a lot of seduction, and we are being warned by the Word of God, that in the end times there will be so much seduction that even the elect maybe. And in Proverbs 1, God really warns us that the fear of God will give us common sense.
Yeah.
Wisdom, intelligence, and I think as Christians we've got to care for the environment. It is our God's creation, but we should not be an idol.
Yeah,
and then we it's not the environment and creation that we should worship, but God.
Wonderful, thank you. An excellent summary of the seminar coming up this morning. So thank you. Wonderful, great. Oh, there's a hand at the comment, Martin. Will we see how many miles you've run over the course of the morning? With a little chip on your jumper just to check the...
My name's Ken. I'm a professional geographer. I've taught climate change and environmental management for the last 30 years.
Oh, great.
And I'm a Christian believer. The fall alienates us from God, it alienates from one another, and it alienates us from the environment, the world in which we're placed.
Yes.
I think there's a huge agenda here. I'm looking forward to hearing from other people. Just one point only, I would say, is that when we look at climate change, We cannot dissociate that from population growth.
Yeah, okay.
And fundamental to the management of the planet relates to the fact that we are overcrowded, or at least in certain areas of the world we're overcrowded. Yeah. And that if the wealth was distributed more evenly through the world, we could probably support 12 billion, but yeah. We can't do that.
Yeah.
And I think that that's significant for us in that context as
yeah.
well.
Yeah.
And so by the end of this seminar, there will be between 6,000 and 8,000 more mouths to feed in the world.
Yeah, thank you very much indeed. That kind of the ecology of humans and population and resources, that balance is just so important. It's obviously an issue that the population growth is a huge one. People are also commenting on some countries where there's a kind of a massive drop off that's coming too. So that it's a kind of unequal distribution globally, isn't it? But yeah, thank you, very helpful. There's another hand somewhere in the middle, and one, yeah.
Thank you. A point raised here was just about thinking about what the impact of what we do here has on other parts of the world.
So, yes.
We might be concerned and doing our bit here for the environment, but how is what we're doing here impacting the rest of the world?
Thank you so much. Oh, there's one more hand at the back. I can't stop. There we go. Let's go.
Sorry, this will be quite quick. We were talking a little bit about how, as individuals, we make godly decisions.
Yes.
Especially when it comes to stuff like flying is cheaper than taking the train. How do you enjoy the good gifts God has given us whilst also caring for his creation when caring for his creation involves making sacrifices? How to make those decisions wisely as Christians.
Yeah. Kind of the economic implications and the way we purchase and consume is just a plays right into this. Great. Thank you very much indeed for... Go on. I'm too... Can't hear me. Okay, one more. Two more. This will literally be it. Okay, there and there, and then we're done.
Thank you. I was also thinking just now about... for development and sort of expansion, when you think about all the spaceships that are going up and the effect those things have when you compare them with the little things we can do.
Yeah.
Is it really, can we do anything? That's sort of a, you know, how do we deal with that?
Yeah, it is ironic, isn't it? The amount of kind of comment on kind of fuel consumption, the amount these SpaceX rockets are kind of burning up in a short supply. There was a hand at the front. Do you want to give your last comment here?
Thank
or question?
You. Yeah. Started studying all climate change recently. Took it all for granted what I'd been hearing on the media. And found there's a massive number of scientists who don't believe that CO2 is responsible for climate change. Mm. Climate change is happening. The Earth is warming, as it has done for a billion years, up and down.
Yeah.
But the CO2 is a tiny proportion of our atmosphere. The growth in CO2 is a tiny proportion of that. And it's not the cause of global warming.
Okay. Thank you. Wow, some... Great comments, really interesting comments around the room, and some experts and some people who've got strong opinions. I'm not going to go over there, I'm afraid, because our time is up. But maybe there'll be more opportunity for feedback as we go. But just to say, over the course of these sessions, we'll tip our toe a little bit into some of the science, but we're generally going to be looking at what the scriptures have to say on the topic, because that's where our sure foundation is found, and we can unite ourselves there, I hope, even though we may find ourselves leaning in different directions on some of the kind of outworking of what we see. Let's just kind of reflect a little bit on how we've got here, because when Greta Thunberg was announced as the Person of the Year in 2019, it was hard to argue with that. She and her meteoric rise to stardom saw her address presidents and popes and the UN General Assembly. Modern day sensation, how have we got to where we are in this whole issue of the environment? How has it arrived here? Let me give you a very, very quick history of green. Okay, as a cultural phenomenon, the green movement is relatively recent as a movement. Hot on the heels of the Industrial Revolution in the 18th and 19th century were hints of what could be called the green romanticism of people like William Wordsworth, I Wandered Lonely as a Cloud, Percy Bysshe Shelley, who saw the kind of energy and investment in production and machinery, and reacted strongly against that and wanted to get out into nature and love the world that was around them in their romantic way and in their poetry and their writing and so forth. And they drew the attention to the beauty and the importance of nature. Towards the middle of the 20th century, pollution became a growing concern, and various pressure groups were formed. Friends of the Earth and Greenpeace was formed in the early 70s, and political parties, the Green Party of England and Wales, was formed in 1990. In 1985, I don't know how many of you remember 1985, the big news story was the discovery of the hole in the ozone layer. And some of us who were children at the time remember the talk about the excessive CFCs, the chlorofluorocarbons that were leading to that. And they were in appliances such as fridges and freezers, that kind of thing. And concepts such as the greenhouse effect was the conversation in science classes and geography classes at school. Global warming language entered the mainstream. And in 2006, the awareness of the effect in our environment was raised by the release of a documentary by the then former president US of the United States, Vice President Al Gore, his documentary An Inconvenient Truth, just drawing attention to what was going on. Now, Bible-believing Christians can often be slow out the blocks when it comes to cultural issues. But as early as 1970, the respected evangelical leader Francis Schaeffer wrote a landmark book called Pollution and the Death of Man, which is actually a very, very good book and worth reading if you can get hold of it today, urging Christians to take the stewardship of creation seriously. And in the years that have followed, organisations like those associated with AROSHA, which was founded in 1983, have sprung up, which engage in scientific research and environmental education, community-based conservation projects around the world. And in the middle, we've had those various organisations and conferences that have formed. So the UN Framework for the Convention on Climate Change has organised a number of key conferences that you may remember the names of. So you perhaps will remember in 1997 the Kyoto Protocol, which was all the rage, 25 years ago or so, adopted by 192 nations with the general aim of reducing global greenhouse gases. That was Kyoto's aim. And this was succeeded in 2015 by the Paris Agreement, which put specific numbers on paper. And the commitment there was to limiting the global temperature rises to less than 2%. That was the aim, and ideally 1.5%. And then in 2021, we had COP26 in Glasgow, and 151 nations committed to reducing their use of coal and supporting developing countries in that, as well as a plan to slash carbon emissions by 2013 with the aim of seeking to reach, quote-unquote, net zero, the big phrase which I'm sure we've heard many times before, by 2050. Now, all of that may sound a little bit jargony. Some of you are very familiar with those terms. Some of you, you've heard those terms in the newspapers, on the news. Let me put some quick fire facts and figures to put a bit of colour onto that scenery. And this information I'm going to share with you now, this is accepted data. This is not kind of from one particular agenda. I think wherever you stand on the spectrum of responses, these are kind of relatively kind of factual piece of data. The planet is warming. It took many thousands of years for the Earth's temperature to increase by half a degree. But it's gone up a further 1 degree in the last 100 years alone. And this has resulted in the melting of the polar ice caps and the accompanying rising of the sea levels globally. And by 2100, in what, 76 years, it's estimated that the world's oceans will have risen by 1 meter within 76 years. Now, that will be frustrating for those of us who like our holidays by the seaside, but if you live in countries like Bangladesh, where 10 million people currently live below the 1 meter contour, that will devastate whole countries. And we've already had it identified, the fact that the issue of climate change and the challenges that are being faced globally are disproportionately affecting people around the world. We may well be buffeted in our place. Obviously, Keswick not long ago was heavily flooded, and we've experienced different kinds of effects for ourselves. But there are some countries where these extreme weather conditions, flooding or fires in Central Asia and in Africa and Australia, devastating whole communities. So the planet is warming. Next up, biodiversity is plummeting. Around 1.2 million species of plants and animals have been identified by scientists. And the vast diversity of living things that call our planet home, they're not just an irrelevance or a luxury for those who are into those kind of things, like David Attenborough, but along with the land and the water and the air, the plants and the animals form a rich ecosystem that works together and enables life to exist on Earth as we know it. According to the International Union for the Conservation of Nature, one in four species is at risk of extinction, with a 70% decline in the populations of mammals, birds, fish, reptiles, and amphibians since 1970. Well, there's also widespread deforestation. Rainforests are shrinking. The Amazonian rainforest contains a bewildering half of the world's living species. Isn't that amazing? Half of the living species in the world live in the Amazon rainforest, and the Amazonian rainforest and other rainforests like them act as enormous carbon sponges, absorbing vast quantities of CO2 and converting it into oxygen. However, since in the last 20 years or so, between 2001 and 2019, Brazil lost 140 million acres of trees, an area larger than the state of California, due to deforestation in those 18 years alone. And throughout 2019 alone, an entire football field's worth of rainforest was lost to the planet. An entire football field of rainforest lost to the planet every 6 seconds. Widespread deforestation. Soil quality is going down. Aggressive agricultural processes means that the topsoil that has taken years and years and years to develop the nutrients that are needed in it in order to produce life, aggressively have been taken away due to extreme agricultural processes, and that topsoil therefore is going down in terms of its quality, leading to flooding and over desertification of places and devaluing of the quality of the soil. That's in the fields, in the oceans. Plastic pollution is going up. I'm sure we will remember seeing perhaps some of that video footage of the Planet Earth documentaries. Just last week, in fact, I took my family to Greece, and we had a lovely time in Greece and took our kids snorkeling. It was lovely seeing the fishes under the water, and we saw that. But maybe you remember, I think it was in Planet Earth 2, when the Great Barrier Reef was discovered, and the result of the warming of the oceans has meant to the bleaching of the coral underground. But the plastic pollution is so devastating. Have you heard that every minute of every day around the clock, the equivalent to a lorry load of plastic is dumped into the sea? Every minute of every day around the clock, a lorry load of plastic dumped into the sea. And at the current rate, if it continues, by 2050, there will be more plastic in the Earth's seas than fish by weight by 2050, so less than 25 or 26 years away now. Are you still sitting comfortably as I give you all that information? I wonder how you respond. Well, I think people respond in different kinds of ways to what I've been saying, and I think that's been reflective in the discussion that we've had in our time so far this morning. When it comes to thinking about the environment, I want to suggest that there are two extremes that we need to be aware of, what I call the climate pendulum. On the one hand, we have what we could call the panicked response. This is where all things green are all things that matter. It's the reaction that leads people to gluing themselves to public buildings or blocking ambulances from going down the road, or people throwing orange powder over the snooker tables and the Lord's cricket pitch and centre court at Wimbledon, Extinction Rebellion and so forth. It's a reaction, if you saw the Netflix movie Don't Look Up, about a couple of scientists who are convinced that there's going to be an extreme event going to happen. A comet is going to crash into the planet in 6 months. And they run around the world in a giant media tour trying to persuade everyone, take it seriously, we're going to die. And that is a response that some people have to the climate crisis that we're in. All of humanity is at stake, and therefore, this is the number one priority for any single government as it gets elected in, any single family, any single school. This is the big project that we should be committed to thinking about, speaking into for our children and their children. Something needs to be done. It needs to be done now, ideally, you know, 10 or 20 or 100 years ago. That's one reaction, the panicked response. Second reaction is what I call the passive response. When anything environmental gets raised, we simply shrug our shoulders or roll our eyes or keep our heads down. But basically, we carry on life as it is. Life becomes a bit like an in real-time green screen. I don't know if you remember using the green screens during COVID, if people were making videos for their churches, or if you've ever watched Jeremy Vine on Election Night Special, you see him walking around number 10 or Downing Street. Actually, he's in a studio with lots of green wallpaper everywhere you turn. But then the clever computers take away anything that's green and project something else. And we live our lives like we're seeing the green issue as if it was a green screen. We just snip it out of our minds. We don't want to think about it anymore. I'm not interested in green issues. I don't know how someone gets there. Maybe they have experienced climate change fatigue. They just disengage because they keep hearing it so much they just switch themselves off. Maybe you've done a bit of research and you feel justified in your scepticism. You think, oh, actually, you know, the planet always goes in these cycles of hot, cold, hot, cold. Is it really humans' responsibility to get involved? The anthropogenic claims that it's human-controlled climate change is the one that's concerning. So actually, who cares about that? Let's just be passive. Let's just live life as it is. Maybe you feel that the climate change issue is the latest tree-hugging fad and you're not going to get involved very much. Thank you so much. Maybe your kind of inner pendulum swings between the two. You sometimes feel panicked, other times you feel passive. You don't quite know where to land. I want to suggest a third reaction, a Christian reaction, I would hope. I think that, you know, Christians do occupy these two extremes. I want to suggest a prudent response to the climate change question before us. Here we're going to avoid the panicked response on the one hand, but we're also going to avoid the passive response on the other. Now, the fact is, it is true that Christians can and will have legitimate disagreements on this issue. We may land on different places on the exact nature of the cause of global warming, or how we interpret the statistics, or even the role that a government should play in seeking to do something about it. You know, the trade-off between the sustainable food production on the one hand and the cost of feeding a family on a low income on another. You know, these are not easy equations to work through, and we will land differently. But it's important to push into this with a biblical perspective. And so I want to suggest the prudent response is a biblical perspective, and I'm going to try and explain that over the next few sessions. But before we dive in, I want to just simply state, I actually think it's both easier and more important to hold a prudent response on this topic. I think it's easier to do, and I think it's more important to do than sometimes we are led to believe. I think it's easier to do because I think that the Christian worldview uniquely gives us the tools to think about the climate and the environment in a healthy Christian way. You see, unlike an atheist, we don't believe this physical world is all there is. We believe in a God who made the world, a God who said, never again will I destroy all living creatures, Genesis 8, verse 21, after the flood. That's what God says, doesn't he? You know, we're not sitting on a ticking time bomb waiting for it to explode. As we used to sing with our children when they were little, he's got the whole world in his hands. And so we mustn't fall prey to this panicked response on the one hand. But neither must we be passive in it, kind of ignoring it. It's God's world. So not caring about deforestation or plastic pollution or the diversity falling in our oceans and our land, that's not an option either. The Christian perspective gives us a way of being able to kind of avoid those extremes, which I think is great news. So I think it's easy to do if we've got our Bibles open. I also think it's more important to do with our Bibles open. And let me explain why I say that. There are various issues today where it's really hard to stick up your hand and say, hey, friends, secular friends, I'm a Christian and I believe the Bible. You know, that there are places where that's quite a hard thing to do. And I'm immediately thinking of issues to do with equality and the LGBT agenda, those kind of things. And to say I stand with the Bible on these issues, it feels like sometimes we're kind of throwing a bucket of ice cold water in the face of our culture and our friends. And just admitting that you stand with the Bible and that you follow Jesus Christ in that area can feel quite scary. The other big issue in our day, honestly, is the environment. There's the kind of equality set of issues, and then there's the environment set of issues. This is the big issue, by the way, in our schools. So many of them, as well as being kind of pumped with equality language, they're being pumped with a concern, a fear about the planet and what they should do about the planet. This is the new religion. Actually, I think whereas in the equality issue and the LGBT one sometimes, we can feel a bit afraid of speaking up and saying, hey, I'm a Christian, I believe the Bible. Sometimes a bit afraid about doing that. When it comes to the environment, I think we can stick out our hands a lot longer and say, we're Christians and we take this issue very seriously. And in that sense, I think we can cut along the grain with our culture for much more time before we've got to go against the grain of our culture than we will in other areas. And therefore, I think it's really important for the Christian witness of God's people that we demonstrate, look, we're not just all talk. We're not just about you coming along to our church event and then we'll proclaim the gospel to you and hope you come to Christ. No, we actually take seriously what you take seriously. You know, we see this world with pain in our heart. This is God's world. It's a fall. It's a broken world. And we need to steward it wisely and well while we wait for the king to return to renew all things. And we therefore take seriously the concerns that you take very seriously. We can kind of demonstrate that. I was speaking on this topic a number of years ago at Word Life, and someone came up to me and said that as a result of engaging with this issue, it's opened up amazing opportunities for the gospel. They have joined a local litter pick group and an environmental concern group in their community. And just getting out there and showing up where people are at, and a bunch of people in our communities are really exercised by this, and kind of arranging for recycling pods to be set up in their churches or you know, doing some zero waste shopping, etc. Just getting involved there showed Christians aren't just all talk. They're concerned with issues their friends are concerned with, and it led to great opportunities to share their faith. One last final question, which I want to raise, and then we'll open to the floor for some questions before we get into the Bible. So we are getting into the Bible, I promise, but there's a lot of scene setting to do at the start of the day. Okay, here's the objection, but isn't it all going to burn? Maybe you're sitting here quietly saying, thank you, Dave, yes, climate change, net zero. It's all going to burn. We're just wasting our time talking about this. Well, you're in the wrong seminar if that's really what you think, because you know, we're talking about it for the next few days. But maybe you think, look, I'll happily do a bit of recycling. I'll happily, cycle to work rather than drive my car. But does it really matter about carbon footprints and climate change? It's just like trying to play the violin on the Titanic. It's all going to burn. We're going to sink. We're going to go down soon, and we just need to stop painting the walls of the Titanic or playing the violin on the Titanic. Just get people to the lifeboat. That's the most important thing, isn't it? That's an interesting question. I wonder how you respond to that, because I have thought that before. I think I may have even taught that before. It is very easy to be distracted from the most important task of getting the gospel out to people, by the way. And we can be distracted in all sorts of different ways with good causes, and we forget to share the gospel with our friends, so we mustn't ever do that. However, I think there are some problems with the, quotes, the only thing that matters is evangelism, close quotes, argument. A few problems with it. On the one hand, I think no one really believes it. No one really believes that the only thing that matters is evangelism. Because if they really believed it, why would they ever go to university or comb their hair or make sticky toffee pudding or play board games with their children? Like, you don't think that the only thing that matters is sharing your faith. You do think other things are important. So let's not be saying that the only thing that is important is sharing your faith. But actually, I think the Bible doesn't teach that the only thing that matters is evangelism. The Bible teaches it's very, very important, and it needs to be high up our agenda. Please, please don't hear me as saying anything other than that. Massively important. People need to be saved for eternity. But it's not the only thing that is God's concern. It's not the only thing that's God's concern. And there are lots of places we could turn to in the Bible to demonstrate that sharing our faith and people being saved is not the only concern of God. It's a huge concern. Maybe you could say it's his most important concern. Yeah, but it's not the only concern. And the place I wanted to turn to is the book of Genesis. Why was the ark so big? Why was the ark so big? You know, if back in Genesis chapter 6 and 8, human sin is spiraling out of control and the world's a mess. God opens the heavens, and rather than drowning all life on earth, God intervenes. He brings about a rescue. And he sends Noah and tells Noah to build an ark. And it's a great blessing, and people are saved. And Noah is rescued, and his wife and their three sons and their three daughters-in-law, they're saved. Here's the question. If God is only concerned about saving human beings from pending disaster, if he's only concerned about getting people into the lifeboat, if that's all he's concerned about, then why did he tell Noah to make the ark so big? Because the fact is that there was a time in ancient history when there was a lifeboat, and God said, get to the lifeboat and you'll be saved. If you don't, you'll be lost. And it's really important to get people to the lifeboat. But back in Genesis chapter 6, God told Noah to build an ark that was so big that the giraffes and the elephants and the cows and the lemurs and the leopards could all get inside the ark. See, if God is only concerned with evangelism, quote unquote, saving human beings for life beyond judgment, if that's God's only concern, then why does he tell Noah to build such a big ark? Surely his heart is yes for human beings. He wants human beings there. But rather than making a little 8-person dinghy to float on the waves of 40 days and 40 nights, he makes a big ark because his heart is for the world, not just human beings in the world. And so that got me thinking, maybe there's more to this question of the environment and our responsibilities for the world than I'd previously led to believe. Okay, I'm just going to quickly pause there, and I'm going to open it for the floor for any questions or comments or clarifications. And then for our last quarter of an hour, we're going to dive into the first kind of movement of the Bible as we think about our responsibilities for this blue planet. Any questions, comments, clarifications? Hand at the front.
Yeah, the Lord made a covenant with Noah after the flood.
Yes.
And he said there would seed time and would continue, and never again would he destroy everything.
Yes, indeed.
And so, I mean, he created everything. That's why he wanted to put everything, all the animals and things into the ark. He created them.
Yes.
It was part of his creation.
Yeah,
he didn't
indeed.
Want to destroy everything.
Yeah, sure. That's part of his desire for a world to be sustained. Thank you. Any other question? Hand at the back.
I was wondering if you could say a little bit more about the panicked, prudent, passive pendulum and what you mean by the world is in God's hands, when we have kind of like, we need to act now because some things are going to happen.
We're going to keep using that pendulum over the next few days. So do you mind if I kind of hold that question and come back to me again if we haven't done that? But I think hopefully as we kind of push into the scriptures and apply it in that on that pendulum, we'll start to see some answers to those questions. Is that okay? But hold me to it, okay? Any other questions? There's one hand over here.
I'll stand up so the room can see me. I'm a professor of energy in a university. A piece of information that the room might need to reflect on: the oil and gas companies employ the same people that the tobacco companies do to spread rumour and dishonesty and delay into this. So there are negative voices speaking into this space, and we just need to look at what we hear with our eyes open.
Huh. Thank you very much. That begs lots of questions, but I'm not going to... I'll come and find you afterwards. Okay, what we're going to do is we're going to have a look at this first kind of stage of the Bible story, which is the fact that God has... Well, here's the summary. What I'm going to be saying, and over the course of the next few days, we're going to break down this one big sentence that I think summarizes our responsibilities for the environment and our hope in the midst of it all. And that big phrase is, this is God's world entrusted to us, damaged by sin, renewed by Christ. Okay? This is God's world entrusted to us, damaged by sin, renewed by Christ. In fact, you've all got it in front of you. Why don't we all say that together and we can kind of drum this into us as we begin to kind of look into the scripture. So after three, one, two, three, this is God's world entrusted to us, damaged by sin, renewed by Christ. Okay, so first movement, this is God's world. I've got a little diagram there, a kind of flow of the story of the Bible. Creation, fall with humanity there, the flood, Abraham called to be God's people and to have God's land and to receive God's blessing, the people of Israel in that, then the arrival of Jesus, and then where we find ourselves today, not to scale, I add, and then the new creation coming in the future. Genesis 1 makes it crystal clear that the blue planet is God's world. This is God's world. So, now you can grab your Bible. Sorry, we did promise the Bibles would come out. It's Bible time, people. Bible time. And... let me read some words from Genesis chapter 1, verse 1. In the beginning, God created the heavens and the earth. Now, the earth was formless and empty. Darkness was over the surface of the deep, and the Spirit of God was hovering over the waters. And God said, let there be light, and there was light. God saw that the light was good, and he separated the light from the darkness. God called the light day, the darkness he called night. And there was evening, and there was morning, the first day. And God said, let there be a vault between the waters to separate water from water. So God made the vault and separated the water under the water from the water above it. And it was so God called the vault sky. And there was an evening and there was morning the second day. And God said, let the water under the sky be gathered to one place and let the dry ground appear. And it was so. God called the dry ground land, and the gathered waters he called seas, and God saw that it was good. God saw that it was good. That's the repeated refrain that we see in Genesis chapter 1. Genesis chapter 1 obviously has been a battleground for Bible-believing Christians. We don't need to go into it now. It's crystal clear that this is God's world. God created everything, and he made it good. The blue planet is God's blue planet. It's God's world. God speaks and it is so. Order is born out of chaos. Something came out of nothing. Behold, cheetahs that can run from naught to 40 miles an hour in three strides. Behold, emperor penguins that can dive deeper than the height of the Empire State Building. Behold, more stars in the sky than human words have ever been spoken since the dawn of time. That blows my mind. What? And it is so. If your instinctive reaction is, whoa, that's amazing. Well, that's the reaction that Genesis 1 wants us to have. God saw that it was good. God saw that it was good. In the beginning, God's creation was perfect, perfect in form and perfect in function. The trees in the Garden of Eden, the Lord God made all the trees. All kinds of trees grow out of the ground, trees that were pleasing to the eye and good for food. I love that. Not just good for food, like energy bars, but like tasty energy bars, raspberry flavored energy bars, white chocolate flavored energy bars. It's not just kind of, you don't get a battery to plug in that is good for you, but it's tasty at the same time. Everything did what it was meant to do, and it did so perfectly. God made it all. Because he makes it all, he owns it all. And this is the famous conclusion of David in Psalm 24. The earth is the Lord's and everything in it, the world and all who live in it. For he established it, he founded it on the seas and established it on the waters. Planet Earth is God's intellectual property. God alone owns the rights to his stunning world. This is God's world. So let's just come back to that pendulum that we start off with and the different responses that we can have to the environment from a Bible perspective. Remembering point one, this is God's world, okay? Remember the pendulum? Let me find the pendulum on the screen for you. Here you go. So the pendulum here. On the one hand, this remembering that this is God's world should challenge the panicked response. Remembering this is God's world. It challenges that response. The Great Barrier Reef or the Amazonian rainforest or the endangered armor leopard might be valuable in God's world. They might be vulnerable in God's world. But they are not ultimate in God's world. They're not ultimate things. They are created things, as our friend said just a little moment ago. We need to beware overvaluing created things. Worshipping created things rather than the Creator, who is forever praised. Amen. Romans 1, verse 20. And it's not impossible for those who have a panicked response to creation and to the climate to make a bit of an idol out of planet Earth. That's not impossible. And we've got to be careful that we don't overview this world as if this is the biggest, the most important thing in the history of ever. This is just a created thing, even though it's endangered, even though it's vulnerable. It's still created. It's not to be imbued with worship status that God is to have. But on the other hand, remembering it's God's world should challenge the passive response as well. The passive response, remember, is the response that just shrugs our shoulders. Who cares? Let's be laissez-faire about plastic microfibers in the sea or habitat destruction. Who cares? Well, no, we don't say who cares about something that belongs to God. It's God's world. Like, how on earth can we say who cares when it's God's world? That's deeply offensive to God, is it not? I've got four children. And when I take an interest in one of their Lego models or animal drawings or their modern calligraphy or their modular origami, and yes, they all do those kinds of things, each different piece of creation that they give me reveals something about the Creator. They say, oh, that tells me a bit about my son or my daughter. And the same is true of God. In Psalm 19, verse 1, we read, the heavens declare the glory of God, the skies proclaim the works of his hands. Which means, if we think about it, if the heavens declare the glory of God, they declare, they reveal things about God. There are aspects to God's character that in his good providence, he knows that we will only grasp aspects of God by listening to the various songs that creation sings. Why did God make galaxies? Why did he make mountains? Why did he make donkeys? Why did he make trees? Ultimately, God made all this stuff. God made everything to teach us about himself. That's a very profound lesson if we would grasp it. And so let's just pause at that point and reflect on this. If lions, endangered lions, if they became tragically extinct, okay, thought experiment, lions are extinct from now on. But God has committed to revealing himself to human beings using lion-like terminology. You remember in Amos, the lion roars from Zion, speaking about God as someone who speaks with power. Or the lion of the tribe of Judah has triumphed, speaking in Revelation of Jesus' great victory over sin and death. And what's a lion? 100 years from now, 200 years from now, what on earth is a lion? No idea what a lion is. but God has committed to reveal himself through the image of the lion. Then, if that's the case, then we have every reason and every incentive to work for the conservation of lions, because God has committed to revealing himself to us through lions. And if they're extinct, then the aspects to God's ferocity at sin and his power and his saving majesty that we would never know in the future. And the same can be applied to lots of other areas as well. So first key lesson, this is God's world. So we need to avoid that sense of worship of the created things, which I think the panic response can slip into if we're not careful. But we also need to avoid the passive response that says, well, who cares? We can do what we like. No, we can't. This is God's. And we love God, so we care for his creation well. Which leads us to the whole issue of stewardship. Because this is God's world, yes, but it has been entrusted to us. But if you want to find out more about that point, you need to come back tomorrow.